Hello, everybody. My name is Andy Fernandez.
My name is Michael Fernandez.
And welcome back to another episode of What Makes It Great. Today, we're talking about Shane from 1953, ranked number 69 on the original list and ranked number 45 on the 10th anniversary list, directed by George Stevens.
Moving on up. All right, Shane.
Shane is another Western, our second in a row, and our third overall, if I remember correctly. And I had never seen this movie before.
I saw it once in seventh grade, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit, but yeah, it was a long time since I'd seen it, and I don't think we watched it like all in one sitting back then in school. It was like during test week or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was, but...
Over like 3 days.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I'd never seen it before. I had never seen it before. We actually watched this one together. This was our first movie that we watched together.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty fun.
Yeah. Every other movie we've watched on our own, and then we come together to talk, but we watched it together, but we kept silent the whole time pretty much.
Yeah, I don't think that it changed really what I thought about the movie or how I experienced the movie, except for like one or two moments that were a little bit funnier because I was watching it with you, which we'll talk about later.
Just a little bit to talk about before. We've seen George Stevens before. He directed Swing Time, and he also directed A Place in the Sun. So this is the third movie on the list that he directed. And so there's some actors in it. Alan Ladd plays the main character. I was talking to our dad, and he said that I think he went on to be the owner of Mr. Ed, the talking horse sitcom later on in life, but what I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't looked that up. Gene Arthur is back from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Really liked her in that, and I really like her in this.
Mm-hmm. And then Jack Palance, I don't know how to say his name, is one of the villains in this movie, and I think this is one of his first early roles. And he later goes on to win an Academy Award for City Slickers later on. And was in the original 1989 Tim Burton Batman movie as well. That's how I know him.
Oh, the old guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know him.
But what's notable about this movie is that comes out in 53. TV is starting to take off. And a lot of people are getting TVs in their homes. And the movie industry itself is suffering because of the advent of TV and the popularization of TV. And so this is the first film to be projected in widescreen. Mm-hmm. As movie studios are trying to compete with TV, they try a bunch of different things in widescreen, and they have a lot of innovations, and they try weird things like 3D movies and smell-o-vision and all kinds of stuff to try and beat TV. But This is the first film to be projected in widescreen. The premiere was played on a screen that was 50 by 30 instead of the usual 34 by 25. And it was very expensive to make. It cost over $3 million to make, which was expensive at the time. And
oh, wow.
It shot on location in Wyoming, and they built the homestead and the small town for the movie and tore it all down after the movie was done. And there's a really big increase in violence in this movie. Mm. There's blood and there's gunshots. Their gunshots are really loud, and apparently they purposefully made it violent and destructive, the gunshots, for the story, to try and show the internal struggles of Shane, the character, and kind of the message of the movie.
Mm.
But yeah, I thought that was really interesting. The first film to be projected in widescreen. That's all I have to talk about before diving into the movie. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, this is Western number 3, and
And you said you were going to sprinkle in your experience of watching it in the 7th grade?
Yeah, well, just experiences of it in general. But I kind of am liking Westerns now. I know you really liked High Noon.
Mm-hmm. And I really like Stagecoach.
But I really like this one.
I think this is my least favorite of the three, so maybe we'll have a good discussion.
Yeah, all right, let's get going then.
All right, opening credits, and it's in color. That's a big difference. High Noon was in black and white. This one's in color. Great landscapes during the opening credits of this.
Mm-hmm. There's some like cows eating and some pastures, and it's like in Wyoming or Montana or someplace like that.
Yeah, Wyoming.
Wyoming, okay. Oh, yes, Wyoming. Would have played into the grass and the trees and whatever. And whatever. Oh, yes. That was Wyoming.
A American Express commercial with Jerry Seinfeld, and Superman.
Yeah.
It's like a parody of Oklahoma.
Yep. Yeah. It's Wyoming.
Yeah, the location really plays to the movie, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
A man is riding on a horse. We later learn that this is the mysterious Shane, played by Alan Ladd. And a young boy named Joey Starrett, played by Brandon DeWild, is playing with an unloaded gun as Shane approaches his family's homestead. This kid is got the most expressive faces in the world.
This kid's ridiculous looking.
As spoiler, he gets nominated for a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for this movie.
Just because people were looking at his face like, how is he moving?
It's great, his eyes and everything. Yeah, so that's Joey. He's kind of playing around, and his dad Joe and his mother Marion, that's Jean Arthur in her final film role.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
She was retired before this movie.
Oh.
She hadn't worked in a number of years, and then she came back out of retirement for this movie.
Weird. I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know too much about that, but they play his parents, and there's a moment where Joey cocks his gun and Shane turns around really quickly and is about to pull his gun out to fire. It kind of just builds up the mystery of the character for me. Like, who is this guy? What is his past? We don't really learn about it directly, but we know that he's got like a gunfighter kind of past to him, mm-hmm. kind of dark and mysterious, but he's trying to get back on the straight and narrow and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's traveling through, and he asks to pass through the property, and when he's heading out, some other men approach to, and they kind of basically like threaten Starrett's to get off the land, and they're cattle raisers called the Rikers, who they kind of resent the Starrett's and all the other homesteaders who have come out, and they see them as coming and getting on their land. Basically, it sounds like the United States government has kind of issued, you know, people to go out and settle this land, but there are already these cattle raisers out there, and they're like, that's not cool, you're coming on our land. And later on they're like,
bunch of squatters.
Yeah. And then like later on they're like, but you weren't here first either, there was these Native American tribes here and everything, and mm-hmm. and it's like, don't pretend like you're the first people out here, kind of thing. So it's kind of weird, and it also kind of puts it in this situation where I'm like, I kind of sympathize with the bad guys in this story, if you think about it.
I don't, just because there's like so much land out yeah. there that they can just easily still have their cattle, you know, grazing just around these people's little plots of land.
Right.
Like, they're just kind of picking a fight because, yeah, they're the yeah. closest people in, like, I don't know, each house is like 15 miles away or something stupid like that. You know, it's mm-hmm. like there's so much space and mountains and it's so pretty and. But no, we can't have these people in our territory.
Mm-hmm.
it's kind of absurd.
Shane comes back around the corner to provide some backup for the Starrett's as they're kind of arguing with these people. And the men leave, and the Starrett's invite Shane to have dinner with them. And it's clear that Joey takes a liking to Shane. And he's always making weird looks and rocking in this like rocking chair really violently.
I really like that scene, though, wherever he's like providing backup for them.
Oh, yeah.
He's just, you know, casually standing there with his, I don't know if he's still in his brown clothes yet, or he's still in his brown clothes.
I think so.
The same like outfit that he arrives in. Then like, who is that guy? And I don't know if he gives him his name or anything. But he's like, oh, he's with us. And he's like, I'm with them. You guys got to get out of here, or else, mm-hmm. you know. It's like tension's rising, and I don't know, just adds to his character, to his character development.
Yeah, and he's got that cool guy confidence swagger thing that, you know, it's not quite John Wayne level,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, I know that I have got the confidence I can outdraw you all or out, you know, fight you all, so I'm not going to like, but I'm not going to flaunt it. I'm just going to stand here all cool, and like that mm-hmm. confidence is going to threaten you.
Kind of thing. What happens next? Do they feed him dinner?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're at dinner, and Joey's, like, rocking on this rocking chair super violently, like,
just,
back
like,
and forth.
Staring at Shane.
Yeah, he's obsessed with him, and he's really impressed with him, and
they get dessert, and then they get, like, the biggest pieces of pie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looked really good.
Yeah, it's like a whole, I don't know, it's like a fifth, no, not a fifth, I don't even know what it is of a pie. It's like a, in between, it's like, I don't know, over a fourth, but, like.
Yeah, I like pie. I used to not like pie when I was a kid.
Oh, no, it's so good.
Pie is good.
It's very, very good. It's like, it's more than, less than a third, but over a fourth of the slices of the pie.
You remember Tiffin's?
No.
I think it was Tippin's.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It was like a pie restaurant that we used to go to in Dallas when we were kids.
I don't think I ever went to this place. I don't know what you're talking about.
It was awesome. They just served pie.
I have no memories.
I guess it was like the Cheesecake Factory, but for pie.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
We should Google if there's Tippin's. Anyways, Shane is eating Tippin's, and they're like, why is this meal so fancy? Like, you guys trying to get me to stay or something? Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, they try to get him to stay.
Yeah, but he doesn't say that. The way he shows that he's going to stay is he goes outside and he helps Joe get rid of this giant tree trunk that's on his land.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I've been trying to get that... I don't know. I need help here. I've got this task list, and mm-hmm. number one's been this tree trunk. It's been here for years, and I can't get it out. And mm-hmm. Shane's like, I love crossing things off lists. Let's do it. And they go, and they just take out this tree stump. And mm-hmm. then he's like, I also like crossing names off of bounties. What else you got for me here?
Yeah, and so he stays the night and sleeps in the barn, and he offers to go into town to pick up some wire for Joe the next day and get some work clothes for himself. And in town, the Rikers are giving him looks, and they start to make fun of him when he orders a soda pop from the bar.
A cola or soda pop? Yeah, it's a soda pop.
Intended for Joey. And a man named Chris Calloway, who's one of the Rikers, insults him and throws a whiskey on him.
Mm-hmm.
But Shane keeps his cool and leaves. Mm-hmm. He doesn't engage this time.
Like, run away, squatter, or yeah. whatever they call him.
They call him, like, make fun of like his smell, mm-hmm. like they like referring to like he smells like a goat or something, or I don't know, because of
not, or like a pig
yeah.
pen or something mm-hmm. like that. I forget what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what'll it be? Lemon, strawberry, or lilac, Sodbuster?
You speaking to me?
I don't see nobody else standing there. Here, have some of this. Smell like a man.
That night, Joe is hosting a meeting at his house with all of his neighbors where they're trying to figure out what to do about the Rikers. And one of the men, who they call Stonewall Tory, because he's a Confederate Southern, proud Southern boy, so they name him after Stonewall Jackson. He's got a bit of a temper, and he insists on staying and coming, you know, it's like, I'll fight him if I have to, kind of a thing. But they have a little funny bit where this guy with like a harmonica, like whenever that Stonewall guy starts talking, he starts like playing Dixie on the harmonica and stuff, and they just like tease him with that. But they all agree with Stonewall, but they're anxious about if it comes to a fight. And they say something like Stonewall, I think, mentions that Shane's not going to be good in a fight because he chickened out earlier in the day at the saloon. And he's still kind of hiding, or like keeping his violent tendencies kind of under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I'm just going to step out. He doesn't confront them about it or challenge them about it. He, again, just like, I'm going to step outside, let y'all talk without me being present here so you can speak your minds freely.
Mm-hmm.
So... he's still kind of trying to
hide his skills and who he really is.
It's almost like he's trying to suppress what he feels ashamed of.
He's tired of it or something. He's just like a hired gun, like a gunslinger who's never, I don't know. He's just tired. He's killed too many people. I don't know what it is.
I think we
don't really know.
I think there's a guilt. To me, I read it as like, this is not a good thing. And this is based on the ending of the movie. Like, mm-hmm. what I've done, is not something to be proud of, and I'm trying to control it. I'm trying to suppress it. I'm trying to move past it.
Mm-hmm.
But his past, no matter where he goes, kind of catches up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up having to revert back to his old self that he's not so proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got to move on. And I think that's kind of like, maybe this isn't the first place that Shane has stopped along his journey to do what he does here.
Yeah, probably not.
And probably won't be the last, kind of a thing. Joey and Marion are listening through the door, and they see Shane outside the window in the rain. I put this note here, like, does Marion like him?
Oh no, they definitely have a thing. I was gonna say that earlier. Whenever he like agrees to help him out and to stay and like eating the pie and everything, like the husband's like, we never have this much food or this much dessert. Like, what's going on? And she's, like, really trying to keep Shane there. And they've got this weird, like, tension between the two of them where it's, are they into each other? Are they not? Like, what's going on?
But they never kiss. They never embrace. It never comes to any kind of fruition or anything. It's just... But it's there. The tension's there. I thought that was interesting. And she kind of tells Joey not to like Shane too much.
Yeah.
Because he's going to go away, he's going to move on, and then you're going to be hurt. Mm-hmm. And to me, it felt like...
She was saying that to herself.
Exactly. She's saying that to herself. The next day, everyone goes into town together, so no one will mess with them. They've kind of like, we'll all go into town together, we'll get all the supplies we need, and we'll all go out. They're not going to mess with all of us kind of a thing. Which is a good plan. It's basically a bully story. Shane goes back into the saloon and sees Chris there again, the guy that threw the drink on him. And he tosses some drinks onto... Shane splashes some drinks on him and then gets into a fist fight with him. So he can't hold back anymore. And he gets into this huge fist fight because eventually Joe joins in and they're fighting. It goes on for like 5 minutes and they destroy the whole saloon. And... there's like 7 people involved. There's a good amount of blood on people. And it's just kind of an insane fight scene.
Yeah, no, he takes them all down. It's pretty awesome. It's like a really good fight scene. It reminds me of the one in...
Sierra Madre.
Yep.
I thought the same thing, too.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of the better ones so far. Slightly more realistic than...
A couple of good, really, like... A really good knockouts wherever it's like... the body's in front of the camera and he's punching him straight at the camera, and so you like don't see the connection, and you can do like a really good fall. It's awesome.
They go back home and Marion's tending to them both back home, but the next day the bad guys get reinforcements. Jack Wilson, played by Jack Palance, rides into town, and what a look this guy's got. He's dressed like all in black. He's got that smirk, very Clint Eastwood like kind of face, but he just looks kind of evil. He's up to no good. We learn he's a gunfighter and the Rikers have brought him in to take care of the homesteaders. Shane meanwhile is on the homestead. He's teaching Joey how to shoot, and we see that Shane is quick draw, and he's a great shot. But Marion hears the gunfire and scolds Shane and tells him that guns aren't going to be her boy's life. And he kind of says something that I think a lot of Second Amendment people say these days.
A gun is a tool, Marion. No better, no worse than any other tool. An axe, a shovel, or anything. A gun is as good or as bad as the man using it.
And she's like, well, they'd be a lot safer if there weren't any guns in the valley.
It's like, yep, just like there wouldn't be... never mind, I'm not gonna get into that.
But yeah, it's the typical counter argument to the Second Amendment argument that Shane is kind of saying. I think the next thing is they're celebrating the 4th of July, and Stonewall Tory goes into the saloon, and his confidence and temper kind of leads him to start talking crap to Jack Wilson and the Rikers. That doesn't pay immediate dividends quite yet. But he's just kind of going off on them. But back at the party, Shane is dancing with Marion. This is probably the closest they get to, like, consummating their relationship. Is that the word? Consummating?
Have sex?
Like, coming together, like sure.
They're just coming together physically.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she married.
Yeah. So that's not going to happen in this movie.
No.
So this is as close as we get, I think. It's just them dancing.
Yeah.
But that night the Rikers and Jack Wilson come back to intimidate Joe again, to no avail. They're sticking. Joe is going to stay on the land. But then this next scene is kind of where it all starts to come to a head. Stonewall goes into town with another homesteader, and Jack Wilson intimidates Stonewall until kind of egging him on.
Wait, hold on. We're flying through this movie. We have to backtrack back to the kid scene where he's shooting, Shane's shooting and teaching him how to shoot.
Sure.
This is the one part in the movie where we both cracked up.
What happened? I don't remember what we were laughing at.
I think it's this scene. Maybe it's not, but he like he asks Shane to shoot something and to like aim like
a can or something.
Uh-huh. And Shane like boom, 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 hits it like right on, and then it cuts to the kid's face for a second, and he's just standing there with his like mouth open, and he's got this really dumb look on his face, and it shows him for like 3 seconds and then cuts back to some other stuff.
Yeah, it's a really long shot of like this goofy face. Yeah.
And then it cuts back to like the conversation, or cuts back to his mom doing something, but we both burst out laughing while we were watching this, because you did at least. And that made me like it more.
Yeah, and Oscar nomination.
Oscar nomination. Yeah, dumb face gets it. And then, you know, so I watched this movie. I was talking about how I watched this movie, and we read the book for sure in seventh grade, and we had, I think we watched the movie. I'm pretty sure we did. But we had to remake, like, we had the option, I don't know if you ever had this option in school, but we always would have the option in GT classes where it'd be like, you can write a paper, you can like do an art project, like, you know, project thing, or you can make a video about it.
Video time.
So everybody have video. Okay, we're gonna make a movie. So me and some of my friends did Shane. We had to reenact the book or the movie or whatever, and I remember filming this one specifically, and I would have to edit it with like a VHS, and I would have the camcorder plugged into the TV, and it would be a blank VHS, and you like hit record on the old TV whenever you wanted to do it, and you have to stop, and it was not exact at all, and you can't edit any of the volume, and it was just really choppy, and we had to just, you know, essentially get everything in one take, which we never did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always shoddy depending on who was, you know, holding the camcorder. And we never have any scripts written out, so it was just always just off the fly. But I remember we just had like some wild gunshot gun scene, or like it was like it had to be the gunfight at the end, but just like really, really stupid. Me and my friends cracking up at the one of them like trying to sneak up behind Shane. We'll talk about the fight scene at the end, but just the things that we said, it sounded a lot like this little boy, and all of our acting was like, how old was this little kid in this movie?
I think he was like 6, 7, 8, something like that.
Okay, so we were like, you know, 11, maybe 12, whenever we were filming this. So we were a little older, but still.
Mm-hmm.
We were just as cheesy in that. So I've got a lot of good memories of Shane. But yeah, whenever that kid made that stupid face, it was pretty funny.
Do you remember what role you played in that video?
No, I'm sure I was the lead. I was always the lead.
You were Shane, probably.
I don't know. I knew I was the editor. I don't know if I was the director, but I definitely remember editing it. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you want to jump back to where Stonewall goes into town?
Yeah, does it go by... he goes into town first, and then one of the Shane's crew people goes in by two, right? It's like just two of them.
Yeah, and I feel like he's from like Norway or something. Or
Sweden or something.
Yeah. But so they go in, but Jack Wilson is kind of there on the porch of the saloon, and is just kind of staring him down and blocking his path in, and basically eggs him on to reach for his gun so that he can have a reason to pull his gun out and fire on him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Jack Wilson is faster and pulls his gun and shoots Stonewall. And they attached wires to Stonewall, the actor that played him, to yank him back when he gets shot, because he goes flying back into the ground, to really pull him back dramatically to make it more more violent and impactful, because they wanted to show the destruction and the power that a gun can do to somebody.
Oh wow!
And the other homesteaders pull Stonewall. Oh, the other homesteader, the guy from Sweden or wherever, pulls Stonewall through the mud and loads him onto his horse and goes to tell Joe and the others what happened. So he rides to each person's house with Stonewall's dead body on his horse. He's like, he's dead. This is what happened.
And the first one that he goes to is like this guy who's been trying to bail from the beginning. I forget what that guy's name is.
Yeah, I don't remember their names.
And it's like a whole family's like, oh no, we're getting out of here. Oh no, oh no. And then they like show up to his house and like set it on fire, don't they? Or is that later?
Yeah, because that's, so they have a funeral and a burial for Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there. So I'll talk about it here in a second. So they're at the funeral and the burial. There's a man that's playing taps on the harmonica, which I read was unscripted and kind of emotional for the cast and the crew. And there's a dog that like puts his paw in the casket as it's being lowered into the ground. And it's really, like, sad.
Yeah, it was very sad. He was helping out.
Yeah, and apparently what they had, in order to get the dog to do that, they put the dog's trainer in the grave in the ground so that he would be looking down and, like, want to go into the hole with the casket.
What a terrible day to be a dog trainer.
Yeah.
And can you actually, like, get in there? And we're only going to put, like, 3 feet of dirt on top of the ground. Right. Just so the dog can maybe, like, dig it out a little bit, you know, just...
Yeah, it's kind of terrible. Terrifying, rather. Job. Being buried alive is, like, gotta be top 2 or 3 fears for me.
Jump career fields there. Anyways.
One of the men says that this is what you're talking about, that he's moving out. He's like, this is too much. I'm out of here. And as they're trying to convince him to stay, they see smoke in the distance, and it's that guy's house that the Rikers have burned it. And they're like, we'll help you rebuild and save what you can. And he's like, thanks, guys. This community is what I'm staying for. I'm staying because of you friends that I just made on this lovely journey.
But, like, in reality, his wagon was already packed. They already had all their stuff. Their place was just burning down. Like, they could have just, you know.
Yeah. Well, see you later.
Yep.
No, but so they go and they help him try to keep his house, and they offer to help rebuild, and he decides to stay. And we're nearing the end of the movie here already.
Uh-huh.
Joe hears that Riker wants to meet with him and that he's going to go, but not knowing that Riker is planning to kill him at this meeting. And Chris Calloway, the guy that got into the fights with Shane earlier in the movie, kind of develops a conscience, and he goes to warn them about this plan. So he tells Shane about it,
mm-hmm.
but Joe is going to go anyway. And Shane and Joe get into a fight about it, and Shane knocks Joe out so that he can save Joe.
Yeah, he's like, you're a bigger man than me, but, you know, we worked so hard together to get that tree out of the ground in your yard, and now I'm a lot stronger, so I can take you out, and I'm going to knock you out here, sir, and
mm-hmm.
can't follow me, I'm sorry, I'm going to go do this, I'll sacrifice myself here so you can all be free, undo the wrongs that I've done in the past, kind of thing.
Yeah, and Joey's insults Shane, and Shane rides off to go meet with Riker, and then Joey,
like, I hate you, Shane, you're the worst, you beat up my daddy. And then Shane leaves, like, Shane, come back,
I'm sorry. Yeah, immediately feels guilty.
Why did he? Yeah.
And then his mom's like, he can't hear you, and then so he starts yelling,
okay,
and
okay, I'll run after him.
Yeah, runs after him, and the mom lets him go, even though she knows
he said he can't hear me, how far is it to town?
Yeah, even though he knows, or she knows, that he's going to go fight this guy that's gonna go try to kill him,
like, 4 miles, damn it, okay, I'll do it.
Shane arrives at the saloon and sees Jack in the saloon. He taunts him, they draw, quick draw, and Shane wins, killing Jack, and he turns around and kills this the seated main bad guy.
And then Joey's standing outside of the saloon, he's looking underneath the door, and there's this guy on the second floor, and he's about to shoot him, and this is the part of the movie that in seventh grade we made.
Of course, it's the most action-packed.
Yeah, I know, but there's like, I remember it was at my friend Jacob's house, and one of our friends, I don't know if it was Colin or Drew, but they had a toy gun. So we went to Disney World when we were kids, and we went to the Wilderness Lodge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we got those, like, wooden guns that had, like, real metal. You could, like, cock them back, and mm-hmm. it was like, chick, and then whenever you shot, like
one of those old pirate guns.
Yeah, and it would clip, and it would make mm-hmm. a pretty loud noise. So we used those for this movie, for this VHS movie of Shane. And it was, like, the end of the fight scene or the gunfight scene, and then there was the one person behind Shane that was about to shoot Shane, and then somebody either off camera or we just made it that character go, hey, Shane, in this really weird voice, and then we turn around and he shot him dead.
I now remember that. Yeah. I remember watching it and thinking it sounded like Shine.
He was like, hey, Shane. It was like really, really weird. But in this movie, the kid's like looking in the bar and he's like, Shane, look out! Gets the guy on the second floor and he falls off the rails and falls onto the table and he killed everybody in the saloon. Mm-hmm.
But that last guy shot Shane too and wounded him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shane,
yeah, he looks down. It's
yeah. And then Shane goes outside to Joey, who's watched the whole thing, and Joey apologizes to Shane what he went there to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shane says that he's not gonna be going back to the Star at home, but that he's gonna be riding on. And Joey tries to get him to say, and Shane says that he can't because of basically of him killing people, and he's like, there's no going back from a killing.
Joey, there's no living with a killing. There's no going back from one. Right and wrong, it's a brand. A brand sticks. There's no going back. Now you run on home to your mother and tell her everything's all right. There aren't any more guns in the valley.
I guess that kind of sums up his character and why he's always moving on. He's talking about riding on, but he's been wounded and shot. Does he mean like moving on to the next town? Does he like mean riding on like I'm dying?
I don't know. Riding on to the pearly gates. I don't know where he's going.
Yeah, one of those two. I'm not sure. And then Shane rides off into the night as Joey is yelling for him to come back. And those yells are for Shane. It's probably the most famous part of the movie. Shane! Come back! And that's the end of Shane.
Yeah, Shane. There's one thing on here, one clip that you need to talk about, the Logan reference.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've seen the movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah, Logan? I've seen Logan.
Fantastic movie, one of the better comic book movies out there, and it's very Western influenced, and there's parts in that movie where they actually watch the movie Shane, like in a hotel room. Specifically this last part where Shane's talking about what it means to kill someone. And at the end of Logan, spoiler alert for the end of Logan, the little girl who...
Laura.
Yeah, who Logan is protecting, you know, she's at the grave of a character.
Well, Logan's dead.
Yeah, Logan's dead.
Yeah, it's a eulogy for Logan. Wolverine's dead.
And the eulogy that she gives to him is word for word the speech that she watched in the movie Shane.
A man has to be what he is, Joey. Can't break the mold. There's no living with the killing. There's no going back. Right or wrong, it's a brand. A brand that sticks. Now you run on home to your mother. You tell her everything's all right.
It's very, very poignant. And again, it's the same theme that's being talked about in Logan that's being talked about in Shane, 60 years later or whatever it is. We're still grappling with these same issues. And I think now that I've been talking about this movie with you, I really appreciate this movie a lot more, I think, than I did when I was watching it. Yeah.
Shane's a cool, well, I don't want to, let's talk about the reception of it and then I'll get into it.
So I talked about the movie was pretty expensive. It made over $8 million though. So it made its money back and then some. It gets great reviews at the time. It gets nominated for 6 Academy Awards for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Best Supporting Actor for Jack Palance, and Best Supporting Actor for Brandon DeWild, the little boy, Joey. And
deservedly so.
But it only wins one for Best Cinematography, which that's a good one to win.
That is.
Like I said, American Film Institute ranks it number 69 and number 45 on its top 100 movies lists. Shane is the number 16 best hero, number 53 on the best cheers list, the ones that movies that are feel triumphant. Number 3 best Western, according to AFI. And it has the number 47th best quote, and that's Joey yelling, "Shane, come back."
It's not, "Hey, Shane."
No, it's not that.
Oh, damn.
But yeah, that's it for the movie. We just got to talk about what makes it great.
Yeah. You want to go first?
Sure.
Go for it.
I really appreciated the interesting dynamic between the characters, in particular, Shane's kind of the theme of the struggle of Shane. And I appreciate it, I think, more so after this discussion of it. The location, the fact that they shot on location, they really utilized the widescreen format and the color to take advantage of that, I think was an effective use of it, so it really worked for me. And the violence, the upping the violence in this movie, but doing it with a purpose, to advance the themes of the story. I think really they went hand in hand and really made it purposeful and intentional, and it added to the story and added to the movie. Overall, I liked the look of the movie too, and the fighting and the action, kind of while still outdated, looked to be an improvement for the time for me. I think that's what makes this movie great.
Let's see. For me, you know, this is the third Western on the list. I really liked High Noon. Stagecoach, I didn't give enough credit. And I was kind of crapping on Westerns back then. But this one I really like. I like how it kind of like Mutiny on the Bounty, where that movie felt like you were on a long boat ride and like a long boat journey. Like this one felt like you were in a Western. Like it was slow, not like slow, but like the conversations and everything, and like the pacing of a lot of the scenes was slower. Like you had a lot of time. Like it would take a lot of time for other people to get to you and interrupt your conversations. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the good memories that I have as a kid of this book and this memory and this project, film project I had with my friends, Jacob, and it was Drew. I'm sure. I don't think it was my friend Colin, but it was Jacob and Drew, and I forget who else was in it, but I just remember having a great time doing that, and it makes this movie just kind of stick with me. But I really like, obviously, the cinematography was good. Wyoming was really nice looking.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is great, but I really like the character of Shane. I like mm-hmm. how it's, and it is one that keeps coming on, like in Logan and a bunch of other movies. It's the bad guy who's good, like the bad good yeah. guy, you and, know, he's trying to look for redemption, and yeah.
they never tell you his backstory, but they give you enough hints to where you can fill in gaps for yourself.
Yes, yeah, he really needs to redeem himself for himself. It's not like it's for anybody else. He's like just found this random family and he's gonna save him, he's gonna do his best, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of cool. It's like, you know, he can still be good, and it's cool that he's like number 15 on the best good guys or whatever it is.
Yeah,
heroes. But yeah, it was fun. I really liked that, and I liked watching it with you, and I liked talking about it with you. I think those are all the things that make this one great.
Awesome. Yeah, it was fun. So that's Shane from 1953.
Ooh.
Next we have our final movie from 1953.
Sweet.
From Here to Eternity.
I don't know anything about this one.
I haven't seen it either. It's ranked number 52 on the original list, and it fell all the way off, and it's not ranked on the 10th anniversary list.
Okay.
But that's next time. Don't forget to leave a review, subscribe if you haven't subscribed, and share with your friends and family if you're enjoying the podcast. But for this time, my name is Andy Fernandez.
And my name is Michael Fernandez. Thank you guys for joining us on What Makes It Great.